announcement about what he's up to. Billy?
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Billy, and yes, I have recorded, and currently at 12steptapes.com, there is a menu item there to simply go over and click on that, and then we'll rocket you over to the playlist. I'm working with Bill to see if we're going to have those available for download. Typically, I just do streaming listening, so however we want to do that. Anyway, it's available on all mobile or whatever option that you want to listen to it. So 12steptapes.com. You'll run into a bunch of other stuff there too also. So thank you, and I appreciate you guys having me.
Thank you, Billy. So after this session, we won't do another breakout. We'll just do a little farewell, say goodbye. But the tapes are available and you can get that. And I think that's about it. So Don, why don't you take us home, buddy?
Thanks, Bill. Don Landis, alcoholic. Thumbs up if you can hear me.
Beautiful.
Yeah, but I know this will be a short session. We'll be done by 1 o'clock, get back on schedule, and that won't take more than that. And I just wanted to take a moment, thank everybody for being here. And it's, you know, one of those unexpected delights. There's a lot of faces here that, you know, I obviously didn't expect or know who was going to be here. And it's just great to see you guys. And, you know, too many names to mention, and a lot of men that mean a lot to me that I've met over the years. And I was just, you know, had that unexpected moment of gratitude where you just, the reality of your life kind of slaps you. And what a nice gift that is when you really realize how fortunate we are to be in our society, connected the way that we're connected to each other, and how unusual that is in the human experience to not just be connected on the level or the depth or with the transparency we get to experience, but the plethora of different backgrounds and ages and approaches to life that we get to share, the massive amount, the ridiculous amount of friends that I have, and these friendships I've made over the years, where I care deeply about people, and I know you care deeply about me. And I'll share this story with you. In this last session is called Surviving the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is kind of tongue in cheek. It's really more about, I think, what we have to keep in mind. For me, what I keep in mind as an AA member, if I really want to be here for the long haul and be effective and enjoy it and enjoy every moment of my experience as an AA member, there's some things I'm going to have to keep in mind. There's some things I'm going to have to discard. There's some things I'm going to have to practice. And it's really what it's about, more than that AA is the problem. We have to learn to deal with all the nonsense here. I don't feel that way. I love everything about our society. I'm of that class that, where else can you get entertainment like this for a couple of bucks in the basket? And, you know, you show up on a regular basis and it's theater in the round without a script. You don't know what's going to happen from meeting to meeting. And I've had experiences where I've sat in an AA meeting and heard something shared or witnessed something and thought to myself, this is the only place on the planet this is happening right now. And there's no point in even talking about it. If you didn't see it, you wouldn't believe it. It was that unique and that perfect in that moment. And you just can't get the grin off your face. And God, I was thinking about Sheldon. Sheldon and I had an experience, and I won't go into the details, but we were together somewhere on the road. And we had the mirror experience where we pulled each other aside. We were looking for each other. And I told him, I said, I'm having a moment. And he goes, I am too. And it was so delightful that we both were kind of having this spiritual upheaval in our lives at exactly the same moment together. And, you know, you have these moments where it's a shared experience, and there's something so valuable to that. There's nothing worse in my life. You know, I love wildlife and I love the outdoors and I spend a lot of time in it. And every now and then I'll see something and I'll be alone. I wish I hadn't seen it. If there's nobody to share the experience with, it's not that it didn't happen and it's not that it wasn't beautiful. It just isn't, doesn't have the magnification when I get to see what your eyes, I get to ask what your eyes see, and I get to hear what that meant to you. The shared experience is so valuable to me. And we get that on a regular basis in Alcoholics Anonymous. Years ago, my sister, Patricia, who plays a prominent role in my story. You know, she's that relative. Many of us have that relative, the one that kept us alive till we were lucky enough to make it to AA, the one that wouldn't quit, the one that in spite of good advice and obvious evidence, just wouldn't give up. You know, when everybody said, cut your losses, get away from him, he's going to drag you down with him, he's just a maniac, what are you doing? She just couldn't live with herself. And she said that. She goes, I couldn't live with myself if I hadn't done everything I could do for you. And she couldn't do a thing about my alcoholism, but you kept me alive several times, long enough till I could make it to you. And we become, you know, in this growing up, this maturation process that we go through in recovery, you know, I've gone from the black sheep of the family to the guy that, you know, years ago, she called me about something going on with her life, looking for advice. And we finished the conversation and she said, isn't it amusing that you turned out to be the stable one in the family? And boy, isn't that funny. Nobody saw that coming, trust me. And one day we were talking and right in the middle of a conversation, she said, God, I wish I was an alcoholic. And I said, oh, no, you don't. And she goes, no, not the crash in your car and going to jail and being a big fat loser like you did. She goes, no, what you have now. And I said, what do I have now? And from the non-alcoholic on the outside looking in, this is what she saw. She explained to me that she goes, you know, when I went to college, I made some friendships. And these friendships have become the most important friendships in my life. We are now 40 years down the road, and I'm still friends with these women. And they are like sisters to me. Now we've gotten old together. We've started careers together. We've gotten married together. We've raised families together. I need to let you know that they are the most important relationships I have. But because of the busyness of life and the confusion and logistics, and there's always something going on, if we're going to get together and be in each other's presence, oh my God, it's an endless series of text messages and phone calls and emails and scheduling snafus. But if we really put our shoulder into it and really pay attention, if we're lucky, we can get together about once every 3 months. And when we get together, even if it's for a half a day, I got to tell you, Don, it's glorious. And we always say the same thing at the end. Oh my God, we have to do this more often. But life is busy, and that's the best we seem to be able to do. And then she continued, but you go to AA, which means all you have to do is go back to the same place you were at the week before, at the same time, and all the people you love in the world the most are there waiting for you. And I never thought of AA that way. I didn't, from the non-alcoholic, one of the best descriptions of AA I've ever heard. I just have to get in the car and go back to the same place I was at the week before at the same time. I don't have to call anybody. I don't have to text anybody. I don't have to have an endless series of emails. I've come to count on you being there. And I love you and you love me. And all I have to do is show up. And I'm having the most profound spiritual experience, the most profound human experience I think anyone can have, which is that pure, unadulterated exchange of love between two people. And in our case, between many people in a group setting, if we're lucky enough to be members of a home group that experience this. And I hope I never forget how important that is. And that conversation with my sister so many years ago was very helpful to me, because I will tell you, I have gotten in the shower many a night going, God, I don't want to go. I got a lot going on. I got a lot going on in business. I really need to stay home and take care of this thing and work on that file. And as I get out of the shower and get dressed, I'm going, man, I don't want to go. I'm not going to go. You know, as I'm driving to the meeting, Jesus, I don't want to go. God, as I arrive at the meeting, I'm already thinking about what I'm going to do, what time the meeting ends, how long it'll take me to drive home, how much time I have spent to go do the stuff that's what important in my life. And you know the rest of the story, because you're AA members like myself. You get to the meeting, and at some point during that meeting, you think to yourself, my God, and I didn't want to come tonight. This is awesome. I would have missed this. And you don't learn that lesson once, do you? You know, I don't know how many times I've had to learn that lesson over the years where I didn't want to go. And that's why I think, you know, bringing this air, this principle of non-negotiability into this area of our life is essential. You know, I negotiate for a living. I'm a salesman. That's all a salesman is. He's a negotiator. You know what I mean? You just listen and you're trying to figure out what they need and trying to give them what they need, trying to be of service and trying to educate and see if you're a good fit for each other. But it's constant negotiation. And really, I negotiate just about everything in my life. I negotiate where I recreate, where I live, what I eat, what I do for entertainment, what my hobbies are. It's all up for negotiation. And that's part of the privilege of having a free life and being a free man and being able to go anywhere that free men go. Everything's a negotiation, except one thing. I don't negotiate my membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what negotiation sounds like? Do I want to do it? Do I need to do it? It will be fun if I do it. Is it necessary I do it? All of those questions are a form of negotiation. I don't have that about AA. I just do it. Takes me out of the equation. That's essential for a guy like me. It turns out that the devil lives in the negotiation. You know, that's how people leave AA, I believe, is they negotiate their way out of here. I don't think anybody ever says this. That's enough of a good life. I've just about had as much pleasure as I can stand. I'm ready for some good old-fashioned conflict and near-death experience. You know, I haven't destroyed anything in years. I miss that. I mean, we all know that's not what happens. Nobody leaves AA hoping for a negative outcome. I think it's a simple case of underestimation. Nothing more complicated than that. I think if we really understood what we were up against, nobody would ever leave AA. Why would you? All of us seem to have that common experience of nothing else worked, right? We use different words and stories to get that narrative across, but nothing else worked until I came to AA. Now, if nothing else worked, you're going to have to believe a couple of delusional things to leave here. You're going to have to believe that you don't have alcoholism anymore. That would be the first thing you'd have to believe. Or believe that it really wasn't as bad as you think it was. Now, the problem is consequence won't keep me here. We know that. So I have to find a way, if I'm going to stay for the long haul, to really enjoy this thing. Because I got to tell you, if I'm addicted to anything, I'm addicted to a good time. If AA is not a good time, I'm not going to be here for the long haul. And I think to survive the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have to be more, you know, than a guy that goes to AA. At some point, I have to become an AA member. Because a funny thing happens to guys like me. Yeah, it usually happens anywhere between 18 months and 3 years, but it's like clockwork. And I sponsor a lot of guys, and I've been sponsoring men, like I said, since I was 6 months sober. And it's, you can almost expect it. Somewhere between 18 months and 3 years, a guy that you sponsor is going to want to have a talk with you. He goes, I need to talk to you. I'm having a problem. You go, what's the problem? You know, I'm having a tough time going to the meetings. I'm having a tough time with AA. And then they say the thing that we all say, you know, I'm not getting a lot out of the meetings anymore. And shocking, I know. And at a certain point, without our permission, this buffet that we come and we're new, and we walk into a room and there's a room set up and there's coffee made, maybe there's cookies out and there's literature prominently displayed and there's all these wonderful things. And we never realize, we take advantage of all of it. The sponsorship that's available to us, the fellowship, the friendship, the love, the guidance, the support. We take advantage of all of it. And that's why we set up the meetings. That's what we're supposed to do when we're new, is take advantage of all of it. And it takes, you know, it took me a while to realize what had really occurred before I came to AA September 16th, 1991. And it was nothing less than this. For many, many years, men and women had been willing to be inconvenienced, had given up their personal time and their interruption of their pleasures to hold their spot in the line in their home group and set up meetings and tear down meetings. And because they knew I was coming, they just didn't know when. But they set it up every night. So when I had my opportunity to recover, the spiritual apparatus that is the AA group was up and running. It was able to absorb another suffering alcoholic. And I have an awareness of that today and how magnificent that was. You know, there's a guy in my home group and we pick him up and bring him to the meeting and take him home after the meeting, you know, when we were meeting in person. And we haven't met in person since March. So we miss each other, but we're doing the Zoom thing and we're doing everything we can to stay connected. But this guy's got 53 years of sobriety, right? And I'm sitting here at 29 years, pretty proud of that, pretty happy that I'm sober. And I think about, oh my God, you know, this guy was 24 years sober when I came to AA, when I was brand new, my first day, for 24 years. And now we're like the best of friends, right? This guy's in my life. He's been in my life for many years and we're very close. We love each other. And I think he waited 24 years for me, you know, and I know he didn't think of it that way. I know he was trying to save his life, but I think about commitment and I think about the non-negotiability, the example that is of me, that these people saw beyond their own predicament, saw beyond their own life and saw value in what they could do for the next guy. And we're excited about it, that enthusiastic approach. That there's nothing more important than playing some small part in the resurrection of another person's life. And perhaps the small part we play is nothing more than being witness to, so we can share that experience. And maybe sometimes it's more than that. Maybe we get to sponsor somebody, sometimes for the short haul, sometimes for the long haul. Maybe we get to just be a friend. Maybe we just get to walk somebody through something. And maybe we just share our experience, strength, and hope without any inclination on whether it's going to be helpful or not. But I think when we talk about our membership in Alcoholics Anonymous, we start with talking about unity and what unity means for me and how important I think it is in my life. And I think it's everything. I'm a firm believer. I don't make it without you. I'm a firm believer that your recovery is as important as mine. I think the stronger we are, the stronger I am. And whatever I can do to promote unity within my home group is essential to my survival. Now, how do I do that, though? That's a fun way to talk about it. Sounds, you know, heavy-handed and sounds kind of like, oh, he's committed. And that's great. But how do I do it? I mean, what does it look like? What's the manifestation of action where that's concerned? Well, it starts with the non-negotiability. So I should have a list of the way that I approach my membership in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is first, I have a home group. So I'm going to do some things if I have a home group, right? I'm going to show up early. I'm going to be available and I'm going to stay late. And I'm going to be involved in the group activities, whatever those may be. If my group has a business meeting, I don't miss the business meeting. I consider that part of the being a member in the group. I consider that the meeting doesn't begin gavel to gavel. You know, for me, I get to a meeting a half an hour early and I stay until it's time to go home and there's nobody left to talk to. I just, it's the way I do it. I'm not saying if you don't do that, you're doing it wrong. I'm just sharing my experience with that. A couple of things have happened to me because I've always had that approach to being a home group member. This energy, this action, and this focus that I've put on my membership in AA, because anything you do those things with becomes important, is AA has always felt important to me. Now, during the time I've been sober, I've had a lot of challenges and I've had a lot of victories. I've had a lot of rewards. I've had a lot of abundance, but I've had everything a full human life can have. I've had marital problems and sex problems and health problems and money problems. But at the same time, I've had great abundance and great victories and great, boy, standing on top of the world. I hope this never ends, but it does. You know, it's just a theater of life, you know, good, bad, happy, and sad. It's a conveyor belt. It's built in a circle. It brings us the same stuff over and over and over again, right? And we just get better at realizing everything's a gift. You know, I used to label everything. This is good. This is bad. This is happy. This is sad. It's all good. It's just life. I mean, I think that's what I'm excited. What I'm better at today isn't enjoying the good stuff. To be honest with you, I didn't need a great deal of help from AA to enjoy when things go my way. But how about when your perception is things aren't going your way and you're still happy and you're still serene and you're still purposeful? I mean, that's really when you get free, I think, when I'm not in, you know, I'm not enslaved by the circumstances of my life anymore. God, I remember one of the scariest moments I have is about 3.5 years ago. I had a heart attack, and it was unexpected, because it was December 23rd. We're coming up on the 4-year anniversary. It was December 23rd, and I thought, I woke up in the middle of the night, 3 a.m., and just did not feel good. I mean, just came out of a dead sleep, and I assessed myself. And I had horrible, horrible pain in my jaw, and my left arm was numb, and I felt like there was an elephant sitting on my chest. And I thought to myself, these are the classic signs of a heart attack. And then I thought, God wouldn't give me a heart attack on December 23rd, 2 days before Christmas. And I forced myself to go back to sleep. And I woke up 2 hours later, and I'm still in cardiac arrest. And I got dressed and I went to work. And I did not feel good. And I'm driving by the exit that goes to the hospital, and I'm thinking, I should probably go get myself checked out. I just don't feel right. And then I thought, if I feel bad later on, I'll go. I got things to do at work. I got very lucky. I walked into my office. My boss took one look at me and said, you don't look right. I said, I don't feel right. If I fall out, call 911. And I sat down on my desk and just stared at my feet. And luckily, he went in his office and he called an ambulance. And they showed up and they assessed me. And they said, your upper chamber's beating at 600 beats a minute. You can't feel that? I went, nope. And so you fast forward a few hours, I got a stent in my right coronary artery, and I'm sitting in the recovery room. My wife's with me. She's mortified. And my cardiologist, who I don't even remember meeting, walks into the recovery room and says this, points at me and says, you're the guy that dies in front of my wife. I go, what are you talking about? He goes, well, you went back to sleep, right? Didn't you wake up, assess yourself, and go back to sleep? Isn't that what you told him? Yeah, that was me. And then you got up and drove to work? Yeah, that was me. He goes, yeah, you're the guy that dies. The guys that do that don't live. I thought my wife was going to come out of her skin. I had a little talk with the cardiologist later about what's appropriate and inappropriate to say in front of somebody's wife. He told me it was none of my business what he said to my wife, but I digress. Oh my God. And I remember being transported in the ambulance. And here was the fear, not that I was in a heart attack, because I was completely calm. Once I knew I was having a heart event, I was completely calm. Here's what scared me. No regrets. I had none. I thought, man, it's been a good ride. If this is it, I got no complaints. And it scared the hell out of me, because I went, oh, wait a minute. Maybe you don't want to feel that way. Maybe that's when they call you home. You know what I mean? I was like, let me find some unfinished business, something. I had no prayer of God, don't take me. I'm not done yet. There was none of that. I said the prayer, God, thank you. It's been great. If this is it, it's been great. Thank you. And I am very happy that he didn't take me up and say, yeah, you're coming home. But I got that from being an AA member, reaching a place in my life where when I got here, I wanted to be anybody else on the planet. You know what I mean? Just the self-loathing couldn't go any greater. And then you wake up one day and you think, how did I get here? You know, you used to have those thoughts when you came out of a blackout and you're in a field, or you come out of a blackout, or you're in a jail cell, or, you know, and you go, how did I get here? You know, and it's like, we have that same experience in sobriety where we have those moments of clarity about what's happened to us. And we think, I'm so lucky. How did I get here? And so I talk about my home group, my men's group, and this non-negotiability I bring into it. And I think, you know, the traditions in general are great, great suggestions for how we conduct ourselves as AA members. And I want to tell you, I like the way I conduct myself as a member today much better than early in my sobriety. And I think it's just part of growing up in AA. I loved AA so much. I wanted to be such a good AA member. You know, my ego can get involved in anything, and certainly my AA life. I mean, I was 5 years sober and I was on the fast track to bleeding deacon. You know what I mean? I had some really hard, fast ideas about what was good recovery, bad recovery, doing it right, doing it wrong. I don't have those today. I have an approach that works for me, and I seem to attract certain men that like that approach, and I get along with the ones that don't. That's the difference. It used to be, if you weren't in my camp, your camp sucked. My God was red hot, and your God went doodly squat. You know what I mean? It's like, I had no idea how big the spiritual playground was and how there's a lot of different ways that men approach this, and that we're all at different stations of our development at any given time. But the place that I learned how to live really with my fellows out in the world started in Alcoholics Anonymous, learning to get along with you, learning that you were no more and no less important than me, wanting to defend your right to feel any way you wanted to feel about anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, learning how important it was that we left things that didn't involve AA out in the parking lot, that we never let them come into AA and taint what our work was here, to remember that we're tasked, that there's, you know, this is a gift, sobriety, but it's a gift that comes disassembled. You know what I mean? And you come to AA, and this is the place where you'll meet men that will teach you how to put the gift together. And all they ask is this: once we teach you and show you how to put the gift together, you must stay and show the next guy who brings his gift but doesn't know how to put it together. And that's all we're asking. Now, how do I keep that link in the chain? How do I stay vibrant? How do I stay excited? Well, it's a home group. And I think one of the things that's been so important to me is this spirit of autonomy. What you do is none of my business, and what I do is really none of your business, but we should be able to share those things of interest. If we care about each other, we're interested, we should find each other interesting, whatever our approach is. But in a home group, think about autonomy. The reason we're here this morning is autonomy. You know, at some point a long time ago, as Bill gave you a little bit of the history of this event when we started today, some guy had an idea. That was it. He had an idea. And he said, you know what I think would be good for us? Not for himself, but for us. And then he talked to his friends and said, why don't we do this? Well, how would that work? What would we do? And conversations began. And here we are so many years later, enjoying today because somebody had an idea. And because of autonomy, we are encouraged in Alcoholics Anonymous, regardless of how old we are, how long we're sober, social or economic position, to bring our ideas to the group on what we think would make sobriety more interesting, what we think would benefit the new man. Really, that's all we do in AA, in our business settings, our home group meetings, our committee meetings, all of these things. You know, when you're first introducing them, you just can't see the spirituality at work. You can't see God at work. But the reality is, it's all about one thing. Everything should facilitate, or does facilitate, the simple idea of how can we better carry the message to the alcoholic that still suffers. And we start to realize that God runs AA. Now, there's a simple argument. If you don't think God runs AA, it's really simple. You know, all you've got to do is look at the guy to your left and look at the guy to your right, and you'll realize we couldn't do this. There's no way. And then you start to meet enough AA members and you hear the individual stories and you go, there's no way we could have done this. You see how even many years into sobriety, we become perfectly imperfect, but we're still human. There's no way we could do this. No, there's a power at work here that accomplishes, you know, the miraculous. And what's, I've been guilty so many times in AA of knowing I'm living in a miracle, my own miracle, but then judging the quality of my miracle because I saw yours. You know, I feel great about my life until I find somebody, meet somebody with more money, nicer house, whatever. And my ego jumps onto that stuff. And comparing quality of miracle, talk about, if you wanted to find a fast way to piss on the gift, I guess that would be it, wouldn't it? You know? And the reality is, in AA, in a good home group, all that silly stuff, better than, less than, it all goes away because we have a common purpose. And because of autonomy, we get to stretch our minds. So I moved to Bellingham, Washington in 2004. I was just about 13 years sober. So I've been sober in Bellingham longer than I was in LA, which blows my mind. But when I came to Bellingham. I went to a lot of meetings and went to a lot of groups, and you know, I'm looking for where I hear the music. I'm looking for something that's familiar. I'm looking for something, and I got the good advice from the old timers saying, you're not going to like it, and they're not going to like you. And I remember I met with Clancy before I moved, who was a, you know, a big mentor of mine. And he said, well, kid, when you move up there, they're not going to like you for two reasons. One, you're from Southern California and you're in the Pacific group. Two, well, let's face it, kids, you're not very likable. So he told me what to do. He said, leave your LA resume at home. Shut up. The only thing you get to say is how grateful you are that there was AA at your destination. And roll up your sleeves and go to work. You know how to be an AA member. And I did that. And I found a little group of guys. It wasn't even a group at the time. It was a meeting. And it was the SOS men's group. We only met once a week then. And in the 15 years I've been a member of that group, you know, we became a group. We do the things you do as a group. We got involved in the service structure and got a GSR. And now we meet twice a week. And we do things outside of the group. About 5 years ago, we started a men's retreat. And we started a men's retreat because of autonomy. And we started a men's retreat in Bellingham, Washington. We meet the third weekend in February. And we've had a bunch of people out there to come and facilitate. We have a guy come out, take us through the steps on a weekend. And but the real reason we started the men's retreat was not spiritual development. It was because of something I noticed after moving to Bellingham. You see, we're in the Pacific Northwest. Now, if you come visit me in July or August, you'll say, this is the most beautiful place on the planet. And it is. I'm telling you, for about 3 months, it's the French Riviera. And we've got scenery that'll just blow your mind. Just gorgeous. Every corner you take, it's more beautiful than the last, right? You got to come see me in February, though, to really understand how we earn our stripes. You know, when you haven't seen the sun in 4 months and it rains every day, there's a reason we're so green. And what I noticed in AA is we're good till about January 2nd, right? Fall's beautiful here, and you get through the fall, and then you got the holidays to look forward to. Right up into New Year's, man, everybody's doing well, even though the weather gets cold and dark and wet. But you wake up January 2nd, and it's a long way to spring, baby. And I noticed AA got a little dark and a little depressing, just in general. Like, hide the cutlery. There's a reason we lead the nation in suicide. And I noticed that we needed something. And I talked to the guys about it. I said, we should start something in winter. And they go, oh my God, why winter? Winter would be awful. It's the worst weather. I go, exactly. We need something to focus on. And so we started this men's retreat, and it was just an idea. And we jumped on board. And when this would have been our sixth year this year, and because of the pandemic, we won't be having it. But, you know, for the last 5 years in a row, we've sold out our men's retreat, and the guys absolutely love it. I absolutely love it. And it gives us something to focus on. It keeps our enthusiasm going. And then we go, and it's horrible weather. And it's terrible. We tell people, if it wasn't so foggy and wet, there's a lake right there. We swear. You know, when you're in Bellingham and you drive around in the winter, you tell people where things are if you could see them. Yep, I swear to God, the mountain is right there. It's so beautiful, you can't believe it. But this autonomy allows us to stay involved. This autonomy allows me to create the fellowship I crave without what? Without domination. And I think the key to that is the spirit of the group conscience. If I really believe that God runs AA, if I do, right? Then when I'm in my home group setting, I believe that every member of that group is important. And I don't know who God's going to speak through that night. So I go to my home group, I attend my business meetings, and the thing that I have to do at this stage of the game is shut up. And I got to tell you, it's really hard for me. And it's hard for me because here's the excuses I have for not wanting to shut up. Well, God, I've been sober a while. I've been active in AA the entire time. I know some stuff. I've already been through this before. And what I will do is deprive our younger members of the process of discovery that I got to go through. And so what I count on is our group conscience. I count on that if there's something going on in the group and we make a decision, if it doesn't go the way I wanted it to go, I'm going to support it. That's one of the most spiritual demonstrations I can make, is when I lose on a vote or when things aren't going the way I think they should go on my group. Do I withhold my effort? Do I withhold my approval? Do I withhold my enthusiasm? Do I say things like, well, you guys will find out the hard way? Or do I say, well, I guess God spoke in our group conscience. This will be interesting. And then go to see what happens. And by doing that, you know what I get to find out? God does run AA. You start to really understand that not just in Alcoholics Anonymous, but in life, being wrong is the catalyst. It's actually the main ingredient in change or transformation. There's a lot of other things involved, but without this, nothing happens. I have to first be wrong about something I thought I was right about. Then and only then can change or transformation be possible. I do not work on problems I don't have. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have grown by discovering I'm wrong about stuff consistently. I'm wrong about what you need to do. I'm wrong about what works for you. I'm wrong. I have opinions about myself and what approach I need, but all I need to look is at my own experience. Do I believe today at 29 years the way I believed at 4 years or 5 years or 7 years or 6 months? No. Is my spiritual condition the same? No. That doesn't mean it's better or worse. It just means it's not the same. But if I give myself permission to change and evolve and feel differently about things, why wouldn't I give my fellow AA member the same thing? But I think something I think a lot about, when I got sober, they talked about God works through people. They talked about it all the time. And it's not that I don't hear that anymore. It's just my opinion. Maybe it's just I don't hear it as much as I'd like. But boy, it seemed I heard it all the time when I was new. I've also heard this since I got sober. I can't get anybody sober and I can't get anybody drunk. I understand where that comes from. I don't have the power to get anyone sober. I don't have the power to get anyone drunk. But I never want to do this. I never want to minimize our impact on each other. I think the currency that we deal with in AA is kindness and love. And I don't think you can spend too much. I think when we withhold that in a miserly fashion, our kindness or our love, I'm not saying we get people drunk, but I'm saying we're not helping. I don't think you can get anybody drunk, but I think you can fall into the category you didn't do them any favors. I think about what was helpful to me when I was new. I don't really remember what they said to me. I can't remember for sure. I have a guess or my story about what my sponsor said to me, but I don't really remember what he said to me. I mean, we were together all the time, a lot, my first couple of years. This is what I know for sure. He was kind. He was encouraging, and he was enthusiastic about my recovery. I remember that. In fact, mostly what I remember about being new in AA that I hold so dear to my heart today was the kindness of the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I think we all understand what being kind looks like and being considerate looks like and being helpful looks like and being encouraging looks like. Do not diminish the impact we have on each other's lives. I am telling you. My sponsor, when I asked him when I was new, who do I help? I understand I have to help people if I'm going to stay sober, but how will I know who I'm supposed to help? And he said, Don, God knows everything about you. He made you. So he knows you're not very bright. And because of that, the people you're supposed to help, he's going to put them right in front of you so you won't miss them. And he said, from that point forward, if I find somebody standing in front of me, assume that it's a divine appointment. Assume that my job in that moment in time is to just be kind, be helpful, be encouraging. I've never forgotten that. You know, you get a lot of direction and advice in AA over the years, and time tells which was the most powerful. That's some of the most powerful direction I ever received. I don't think you could ever go wrong. Think about what kind of world we'd live in if everyone got up in the morning and decided that everyone that was in front of them for the rest of that day was nothing more or nothing less than a divine appointment. And we had a preordained set of actions we were supposed to take in that moment. And it was based on love, kindness, and encouragement. What kind of world do you think we'd live in? Well, we don't run the world, do we? But you know what we do have? You know what we do? We get choice. We get free will. And I can decide who I'm going to be. I can decide how I'm going to live my life. And I've decided a long time ago, I'm just an AA guy. I know what that means to me. I try to live along these principles, and I try to stay open-minded, and I try to stay teachable, and I try to stay in love with AA. And it's been easy. You made it easy. I'm not a guy that has struggled to stay here. But I will tell you, if you've known me for any length of time, you'll know that there's been effort associated with that, what looks like effort. But for me, it's just that discipline. It's a constant reminding myself of what's happened to me. It makes it easy to do it. I mean, where else would I rather be than with you? Because it's not, my life is not just about me anymore. It's so big. There are so many people in my life having so much joy. I'm watching this expansion of not just my consciousness, but so many of my friends. And I think how wonderful it is that we get to share this common experience where we get to exchange love in this transparent member. So it's very, AA is one of those things that the more you do, the more you get. And the more you get, the more you want. And that's really how I've enjoyed my time in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, is I'm willing to spend a lot of time with you. But it does take a demonstration. So anyway, that's all the time I have. And I want to thank you guys for a lovely morning, lovely day. Sure appreciate being here. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you. Thank you, Don, very much. That was excellent, brother.
Good man.
It's one of the great joys in my life is as the leader getter for this retreat over the years is being able to invite my friends to come and meet my home group and have my home group be able to meet my road dog buddies. And one thing I can tell you about the Hermosa Beach Men's Stag is that we believe in what you were talking about. It's all about sponsorship. It's all about helping that guy right in front of you. And by some of the texting I've got and stuff, I think you've done that extremely well today. And anyway, a couple of reminders, gentlemen. Billy put his information in the chat so that if you want to get a recording of this, he'll have that available on his website. He's also going to have it available for download, not just streaming. So that'll be a good thing. And please support him and his efforts. It was good of him to come and record us. The other thing, if you are so moved, go back on our website, you know, the Venmo there, if you'd like to throw some money in the pot for the Sarah Retreat Center and for promoting this retreat for next year. Hopefully we will be live. I certainly hope so. I mean, thank God we have Zoom. This has been a great boon to Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe it's given the world more access to AA than it's ever had before. It's been much more of a positive than a negative. But man, I miss sitting with you. I miss being with you. And especially on this retreat, man. I mean, the whole idea of a retreat is fellowship. Certainly we hear some great leaders, some great storytellers, and a lot of good information. But I miss hanging out with you guys, smoking cigars and just telling lies, you know, talking about women and making the bed and stuff. And what are you doing? And you know, I can't tell you the number of times I've done an inventory on retreat and read it to my sponsor over the 35 years I've been around. It's a great place to do an inventory. Sometimes I've gone on retreat and I've just laughed my ass off for 3 days, drank too much coffee, ate too much sugar, and never had one serious conversation, you know, and I needed that. You know, there's been other times where I went there and just slept half the weekend. You know, I just needed some rest and I was safe in your arms. I went there one time when I was really sick, and at the photo at the end, several guys, Josh and a few others, had to help me up the steps just to get to the picture. But I didn't want to miss that retreat. I can only think of very few times I missed the retreat. One of them was my dad was in the process of dying, and I couldn't make it. Jay told me a couple of things when I was new. He says, we don't drink and we go on retreat. And I went on this retreat. I think I was 3 or 4 months sober for the first one. And I didn't feel part of, because I didn't really know anybody. You know, years later, I can tell you, I look forward to this with anticipation every year. You know, at some point in my sobriety, I started leading retreats. I love that more than any other service I do in AA besides sponsoring people. It's just being part of the group and being able to really interact with other human beings on a very intimate level. You know, so we did the best we could. I think the breakout thing worked really well. Any of you have suggestions or comments, let me know. Most of you have my email address and so on. So, you know, feel free to make some comments, but I hope that we'll be together live next year. And with that, I think that's, oh, I want to really once again thank Matt Andrews for the work he's done with this Zoom thing. It went off and he was sweating bullets. The guy's kind of insecure anyway. And he was really hurting. And Eric Girard's duty was emotional support for Matt. I think he did a really good job. And everything went off like clockwork, man. It was really beautiful. I think it worked extremely well. I'm very proud of everybody. And Eric, Yum Yum made our flyer, which was really great. A lot of people put a lot of work and effort to put this thing together. And I think it was really wonderful. And thanks so much for all of you that showed up. One of the things that's been cool about Zoom is so many people I've known around the world, around the country, get to visit the Hermosa Beach Men's Stag and see us and see what we look like and what we do. You know, next year, Ralph White's going to be the leader. You know, another one of my favorite people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I think this is really cool. Thank you all for coming and joining us. What do you say we unmute and we'll do this horrible thing called doing the Serenity Prayer together, and you can't understand anything and it's really painful, but at least we're together. So I'll start us off. God.
Serenity.
Thank you, Don, so much, man.
Thanks, brother. Love you, Bill.
Good job, man.